coming to our town. It's gonna be good.
Hope it don't flood.
Oh, it's what's up stream.
Well, hello everyone out there in K-Goat Land. This is Lori Buckle, still flying solo without Mark Cuccinelli, who I think is back this week and will be back next week for our show, I believe. I hope so, anyway. But I am here with my good friend, Etta Satter. We are going to be talking today on What's Upstream on K-Goat Radio 102.3 and 103.7. I think I have that wrong. 102.7 and 103.9 on the radio dial and streaming worldwide on clearcreekradio.com. Etta and I are here, and we are going to have a conversation over the next hour or so in celebration of October being Civil Discourse Month. How about that? Governor Polis even signed a proclamation celebrating the importance of civil discourse to the fabric, really, of our democracy. And we are going to spend time talking about it today. I'll just, by way of a little bit of history, Etta and I can share that now, what, several years ago, Etta?
Many, many years.
Yeah.
We had our soapbox in the park.
We did.
And it rained, and it was so cold. I remember that.
Yeah.
And the idea was to give everyone who wanted to be there, Republican, Democrat, Independent, does not matter, a few moments to speak their mind without name-calling, without interrupting, which to me are just instrumental in civil discourse, is listening to what the person has to say, rather than trying to formulate our response before we even know what the person is saying.
Yeah, because that's kind of the typical thing, isn't it? To already be thinking about what we're going to say, rather than the deep listening that comes with civil discourse, which has a whole different purpose. The purpose is to understand, not to win an argument or to score points, but to really understand. And together with our other friend, Tracy Stokes, who was a part of that whole soapbox in the park effort, then the two of you did a program for a while, right, on K-Goat?
We did.
Yeah.
And I've been fortunate to have been a part of several attempts to have soapbox in person. We have to take the elements that we know. We don't have to, but if we don't want to continue on the trajectory of having this camp versus that camp in our country, where we end up in civil war again, we have to learn to listen together in person. We've had many opportunities. I think the Clear Creek Democrats did at the former coffee house, not at Frothy, but before. And it's very empowering, as well as, in Evergreen Peace, a group in primarily in Evergreen-based has done soapboxes. So you show up and you've got your, no one interrupts, no one calls names. It's neighbors coming together with the intent to listen to one another.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. Right. So we got together a few weeks ago and thought that, especially when we learned that October is Civil Discourse Month, in celebration of that, that we would dedicate a show, first of all, to talking about why civil discourse is important at this time in our country, talking a bit about some of the nuts and bolts that go into a constructive dialogue, which is really the purpose of civil discourse. And then maybe after the break, we thought we might even be so bold as to, right here on air, practice a conversation. So we haven't actually practiced it before now, so we're not sure exactly how it's going to go. But like many conversations, you don't know how it's going to go. But you have an intention to have a conversation. And that's what this show is going to be about.
And we'll do some role-playing.
Yes, we will.
Because all the opinions that we're expressing here are our own and are not those of K-Goat Radio or any particular party. We certainly have no need to, no particular agenda.
Yeah, this really isn't going to be an hour to talk about politics.
Right.
However, we kind of couldn't ignore the current issues of the day just because they will affect so many people. So, but we will try to keep the conversation factual. And when we are sharing an opinion, we will say that we are sharing our opinion. But primarily, we want to share just some information. And Etta reminded me that, by way of a frame for a conversation that perhaps you are thinking about having with someone in your life, perhaps a family member, a friend, a neighbor, something that perhaps you have realized is kind of bothering you. This is a relationship that you value, and that something may have been said or done which is bothering you, and that having a conversation with this person is, the frame for kind of our conversation today. And Etta reminded me that we all have our own ways of seeing things. We have filters that we hear things through, we read things through, we watch things through these filters. And that useful is to consider, prior to a conversation, what some of those filters might be. A filter might be perhaps a person's politics. That could be a filter, right? Another filter in this day and age is the divisiveness and the polarization with people having very strong opinions on both sides of a divide, that is an important thing for us to consider going into a conversation. How disinformation plays a role in shaping people's opinion is something perhaps to keep in mind. What do we know about this person's source of information and keeping that in mind as we go into a conversation. Something that our friend Tracy reminded us of yesterday when we were getting ready for the show, and by the way, Tracy would be here, except she's working today, so she's not able to be with us today, and Tracy, we're missing you. But she helped us sort of frame the show yesterday, and one of the things that she reminded us of is that past trauma can be, again, one of these filters that may even cause someone to get triggered by a conversation, and for us to be aware of an emotional response that we're seeing and really attend to that, because again, this is someone very possibly who's meaningful to us, and that it's kind of like the Hippocratic Oath. We're not having a conversation to cause harm. We're having a conversation to try to understand. So being aware of someone having an emotional response, pretty important. And Etta found a poem that we were going to read, because this poem sort of frames kind of a person who may be having a trauma response to a conversation. So, Etta, do you want to read it?
Sure. I'm happy to read this poem that you found. It's written, it's entitled, it's by Beth Strano. Is that how you pronounce her name, Lori?
You know, I don't know for sure. Strano. I don't know. It's an untitled poem found it on the internet.
I would like to preface before reading this. One of the elements that is, I think, very useful in civil discourse and when it does come to emotional responses is to verify, this is what I heard you say, as opposed to, well, you said, you know, I heard this. Is that what you meant? And if we can speak in I statements instead of you, you know, so I feel this as opposed to you made me or you did that. You know, that is as well very helpful. All right. So here's this poem. There is no such thing as a safe space. We exist in the real world. We all carry scars and we have caused wounds. This space seeks to turn down the volume of the world outside and amplify voices that have to fight to be heard elsewhere. This space will not be perfect. It will not always be what we wish it to be, but it will be our space together, and we will work on it side by side.
Oh, that's lovely, isn't it?
Truly is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really talks about sort of the need to create a safe space for a conversation. And, you know, we thought that it might be helpful. Etta just gave a really good suggestion, I statements rather than you statements. But there are some other thoughts as we were preparing for this about how to set up a conversation, a safe conversation, to lead to constructive dialogue and talking about issues that matter. So a couple of things that we just thought we might go through that might be useful to you all out there in K-Goat land. We really have asked you to think about whether there is someone you want to have a conversation with. And as we go through these points, you might either jot them down, or I am very happy to share the information we prepared today if you wanted to send me a text after the show with your email, I'm very happy to send this to you. And my number for a text would be 303-909-8235. Again, I would need your email to send you this document. And I'll give that information again at the end of the show. But if you're listening and really don't want to be writing things right now, I'm happy to send this to you. So we're thinking about this conversation we want to have with someone. And the first point might be to think about setting yourself up for success. So how might we do that? How might we choose a time for the conversation? How might we prep for this conversation? Are we going to share some written materials, perhaps, that we want to discuss? So this thought about setting yourself up for success, very valuable. And I would like to share just a quick little story about a conversation I recently had with my 95-year-old stalwart Republican mother, and sort of some distance that I was feeling in our relationship, especially after the murder of Charlie Kirk. Someone that, as she told me, she deeply grieved, and she had breakfast with every morning as she listened to him on the radio. So I knew this person was very important to her. I also knew that in the aftermath of that murder, there was a lot of finger pointing and a lot of blaming what was called the radical left for the murder of Charlie Kirk. And my concern and this distance that I was feeling with my mother, I was concerned that she was hearing information about the radical left and perhaps was feeling like her daughter, who is a registered Democrat, but maybe she was concerned that I was part of a radical left movement that believed in violence, which I never have any time in my life. But I felt like I needed to have a conversation with her about this. So during one of our Mondays with Mom, when I go down and I'm her caretaker on Mondays, I just started the conversation after really thinking about how I was going to do this. She was still finishing her breakfast when I got there, and I just said, "Mom, I've been thinking hard about something that I want to just have a conversation with you about. And this may feel a little bit out of the blue. And if so, let me know. But I just want to make sure that you know I'm not part of the radical left. That you know I'm a registered Democrat. I vote Democratic. My principles are aligned with the Democratic Party. But should you be worried about me being in the radical left, I want to make sure you know I'm not." She stopped eating her breakfast. She looked at me and she said, "Oh, my." And she didn't really say it was something that she'd been thinking, but she did say, "I really appreciate you having this conversation with me." And that was all there was to it. Important for me, important for her, The distance, I really felt closed some after that. And I just wanted to share that as a little bit because, quite honestly, approaching that conversation made me a little concerned and worried. And I really needed to prepare for it. And so anyway, just a thought about how you might set up a conversation and rehearse things, maybe think about those filters prior to having the conversation. So,
you know, as you say that, Lori, what comes to mind is a couple things. You know, what is meant by the radical left?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we can help to clarify the terms, what perhaps your mom, depending on her news sources or what she's heard from Charlie Kirk or the aftermath or, you know, whatever, is a perhaps a whole different picture than anything that you would ascribe to, certainly anything that I would ascribe to. You know, so if we can... If in that conversation of having civil discourse with the goal to understand one another, you know, to bring together as opposed to further divide, mm-hmm. is to say, well, what is it that you know, this is how I feel. What is it that you mean when you hear radical left or radical right? I know for me, I don't fit easily in any one camp. You know, I don't want to call myself names because it depends largely on the issue. On many issues, I'm not at all progressive, and on others, I'm probably very progressive. So, and I have a feeling that a lot of people are like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Good point, though, Etta. Good point about defining terms, maybe. She seemed done mm-hmm, with the conversation mm-hmm. at that point. I think I took her aback a little bit. And it still felt like, though, a safe space, and it could be done.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes conversations aren't finished in one sitting.
Right.
So your point about defining terms, very important. So... what do you think about this number two point on our sheet about working together?
Well, let's see, work together to create guidelines for the conversation to ensure a productive conversation. Guidelines, let's see. I think the important thing in having a conversation is to be honest, mm-hmm. you know, honest with ourselves and to be listening to what the person, as we've said previously, mm-hmm. what is it that that the person is trying to say? To look for the nugget of truth mm-hmm. in there. There's very few things that I look at as black and white. You know, more different shades of gray.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not up for gun violence going into schools and mowing people down or movie theaters or anything like that. I'll put that one in a very, you know, black and white, either or context. But lots of things I don't think are. So if we set the guideline, if I am understanding what you meant here, is to listen for that nugget
mm-hmm.
Of truth, you know, mm-hmm. to listen to the person's perspective and assume, know that they are coming from a well-meaning place,
yeah.
you know, not an adversarial place. That yeah. If we don't establish that, then it's almost pointless.
Yeah, exactly. So this is kind of, your point about here, about this, is kind of this... one of the common norms, perhaps, going into a conversation is to assume good intentions
mm-hmm.
And listen generously. It's that making eye contact.
Yeah.
So we're in a studio. We're having a conversation. We have a paper in front of us, but we're looking at each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you really do suggest active listening when you're looking
That's
at the
true.
Person. And, You know, if you're not looking at the person, you might just be thinking about your rebuttal instead of that, you know, listening generously. But back to the guidelines. So what I sort of think about is
let me shut off my phone. Sorry about that.
If you know that you're going to be going into kind of a tough conversation with someone, maybe you've had them before, they haven't gone well. I think the point of this is maybe even before having the conversation, you decide what are going to be the ground rules for the conversation. You maybe set a time limit. You maybe set an opportunity to halt. Either person can halt the conversation if it starts getting difficult. What are the ground rules going into a tough conversation that you might want to establish even before having the conversation? So that's what I think about. This next point about taking responsibility, I think, is related to the trauma piece. You want to read that one, Etta?
To take responsibility for your impact on each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think about that?
Well, I think if we're speaking our truth as best we can, understanding that emotions are often triggered and that we do see things through our lens, you know, through our the way that we were raised, through, I think psychologists are now saying that trauma can be inherited genetically from past generations, you know, just from so many our news sources. There's many times I stop in the middle of the night when I'm awake, for which I'm always awake for a little time. How did I come to the beliefs that I hold? Mm-hmm. How did that, you know, what are my values as opposed to, you know, someone else's values? And so to recognize that, you know, my starting place, that this is, you know, this is where I come from. How all that established, I don't always know. Mm-hmm. But to realize that, you know, that you or anyone else, your mom, so anyone, that I talk to my neighbor, you know, we stand out there on the street and our road, or poor excuse for a road as the case might be. And we don't talk about our political party. We talk about how we could fix the road or how we might want to create more jobs in the county or taxes or any number of things. But we don't accuse, and we just take, we come from our place of listening and respect.
Right. Yeah. And I think this too is when you said earlier, you know, that active listening and taking responsibility, should you inadvertently trigger the other person in the conversation, really can be sort of remedied by sort of taking back, honestly, sort of, this was something I believe, but perhaps not something you believe, and I heard you to say something. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, repeating what you've heard is another, other than, you know, the eye contact piece, it really does assure people you're deeply listening to them. Mm-hmm. I heard you say. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to clarify that way, if I didn't hear correctly, then that gives the person the opportunity to say, well, that's not really what I meant.
Exactly.
You know, so you have that, because if we don't start with that common understanding of what we're talking about, well, then, again, we're starting with a point that then the conversation goes in directions that might not have been intended.
Right, exactly, yeah. Right. Yeah. This next point we've already mentioned, expect and accept that the conversation may not feel finished. Mm-hmm. When it's over, And that it's likely that you'll leave with questions, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And keeping a conversation open-ended so that you can return to it is, you know, these conversations are often not one-offs. They become part of the relationship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're standing out in your road and speaking with your neighbor, they're conversations that can be returned to.
Well, and recognizing that sometimes when we know that the conversation isn't finished, when people are triggered, I know when I'm triggered, you know, there's a point where to say, you know, this is no longer productive.
Right.
You know, let's just stop now.
Yeah.
And allow each of us in the conversation to be able to integrate what's been said and come back to it.
Exactly.
That's a very good point, Lori.
Yeah, and maybe even one of those ground rules mm-hmm. that you want to identify going into a conversation. Mm-hmm. At any point, either party can say, I think we need to stop at this point and come back to this maybe at mm-hmm. some later time after we each have a chance to mm-hmm. think about mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I think the next point on here is to stay engaged even when it feels difficult, so that we don't just, in having any kind of a difficult conversation, to not just say, I'm done, you know, and walk away. Mm-hmm. And again, that goes back to the wanting, the desire to truly understand the other person's perspective mm-hmm. and not just try and push our point of view mm-hmm. on someone else, but to stay engaged and to listen.
Mm-hmm. So when you feel yourself maybe beginning to disconnect or get upset, maybe, that is a good time to check in with yourself and sort of ask yourself what might be triggering you. Mm-hmm. What are your filters, as you've already mentioned? What is getting in the way of staying engaged mm-hmm. at that time?
To touch base with one's own feelings, I think, is, well, that takes a good degree of courage,
mm-hmm.
you know, to not judge, but just to acknowledge, to see what I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm.
That sometimes
makes you pretty vulnerable.
It certainly does, and that's a good point, Lori. You know, to have a conversation like this in civil discourse, to be truly honest with ourselves and another, that takes, we are vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're right, it takes courage. And that's why maybe we're going through some of these points just to set the conversation up for success. So the next point we have here is to avoid sweeping generalizations, name-calling, you know, things like that. Remember that there are wide variations within and between different identities and backgrounds. Again, going back to the point of some of the filters mm-hmm. that we talked about before. But again, could be a ground rule. We're not going to name call.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're not going to, again, accuse or blame. Not the point of the conversation.
And then the next point you have is to consider what responsibilities you are asking others to hear.
To bear.
Mm-hmm. My paper is...
Yeah.
and who you're asking to bear them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, here could be substituted there, too. But if you are perhaps challenging or questioning mm-hmm. a fact, perhaps, and you are asking, perhaps, if additional information is needed, for instance, paying attention to what it might mean to the other person to be asked to change their perspective.
Or for me to change my perspective.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that, you know, we're sometimes deeply wedded to our opinions mm-hmm. and perspectives. And so just being respectful of how hard it can be to change those.
Another aspect of that, when we're talking about facts, you know, I checked out a book from the library once called Conflicted, and, you know, going on down the list of things, and conflict can be a really good source of growth. Mm-hmm. You know, the thesis and the antithesis, and then you come together, you know, for the synthesis. But if we can't agree on what a fact is, and so taking responsibility is also, where did you get that information, and avoid these blanket, as you say, generalizations, but blanket statements that might not, you know, might not have any bearing,
right,
in and how are we going to consider what is a fact?
Right.
You know, what's interesting to me is that I have folks in my orbit, I'll just say, that they can take the same situation, and they see it from an entirely, we're talking about the same thing, but from an entirely different perspective. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, where are we in this? You know, mm-hmm. What's the source of information? How are we going to know what's a fact?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's always a predicament.
Yeah, for sure. And again, maybe it is something that you have to stop the conversation, go away, and come back with new information,
mm-hmm,
to continue the conversation. So, so the other thing is being respectful that people likely have varying levels of familiarity with the topic at hand. So they may be coming at it from, you know, not only a very different political perspective, perhaps, but with very different information. And we need to just be aware of that.
As well as different life experiences. Through which they form
again, filters.
Opinions.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Respects. Mistakes are normal and can often be very useful learning experiences.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't grind someone's nose in it, mm-hmm, you know, add salt to the wound, because what's the point again? What is our goal?
Mm-hmm.
And it's to understand and to, you know, heal, mm-hmm, as opposed to further isolate and divide.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll go through these last few rather quickly, so we can take a little break. But try to engage constructively with views that may conflict with your own. So you may be having a conversation about something and you have a deep opinion that's contrary to what you're talking about. But to engage constructively, you really do need to call in and get more information. That's a term that I've been hearing more and more, calling in sort of the perspective rather than calling out or accusing or blaming or name-calling. And it is this idea of calling in and doing so by asking open-ended questions. Yeah.
Which, again, makes me think of the thinking in terms of both and, mm-hmm, as opposed to either or,
mm-hmm,
you know, and wondering, well, how did you come to believe that way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how were these opinions, you know, what's your news source or what's your, you know, how did one come to formulate that opinion?
Mm-hmm.
And then, what do you think about this text topic? And then what could a different perspective be on that topic?
Have you ever thought about a different way of thinking about this?
And that would be a good goal just in having a civil discourse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is, wow, I learned something.
Right.
I found the nugget.
Uh-huh.
I found that one element of, you know, of truth.
Right.
And oftentimes there is. I want to say most times.
Exactly. You know, and another thing, and then we'll go to a quick break, but You know, very often we can find common ground,
mm-hmm.
and that there are shared values that we have with the other person. And these conversations can sometimes just lead us to that kind of solid foundation where we are sharing what, you know, what is important to both of us, those shared values. Yeah.
Very much.
Yeah.
And then one final thing here on your on the list is, what assumptions do you think the author, if you're reading a book or having, or let's say listening to a news source or a commentary or a podcast, you know, what are their assumptions? What are the values from which that person is starting? And then to encourage, you know, thinking about that, questioning that. Mm-hmm. You know, as a philosophy student, we had to know what the philosopher that we were reading, what they thought. We mm-hmm. couldn't say, well, they think this and this. If they thought, this is what they thought. And then I could have my opinion about it, mm-hmm. but I had to know what they thought. And I think that's a really good way to, you know, to frame things when it comes to assumptions or knowing the difference between what that person is thinking and then what I think about it or what I feel about it.
Yeah, for sure.
Is that what you were...
Yeah, exactly. And so we've just been sharing some thoughts we've had about guiding these conversations to make sure they're constructive, and then meet the goal of further understanding. That is the goal of civil discourse. It has a place in our modern society, which we'll talk about a little bit after break. But the other just last thing is, think about debriefing the conversation you've had before you're done with it. How did this go? Shall we have more of these conversations? This is what I learned in this conversation. Mm. I'm wondering what you learned. So there's a little bit of just debriefing about the conversation itself before you're done. So that's kind of the last point. Etta and I are going to take a minute to get a swallow of water, and we will come back just after we listen to a little bit of music with some further thoughts. Thank you all for staying with us. This is Lori Beckel and Etta Satter on What's Upstream for October 15th, 2025. See you in a few.
We just love to watch you moving to the music. Pretty dolly, you're a sight to see. Bet my Uncle Amos, one day you'll be famous. Pretty dolly, dance a song for me. Pretty dolly, dance a song for me. Pretty dolly, dance a song for me. Pretty dolly, dance a song for me.
Listening to KYGT The Goat, the voice of Clear Creek County, Colorado, 102.7 and 103.9 FM.
Se você disser que eu desafino, saiba que isso em mim provoca imensa dor. Só privilegiados têm ouvido igual ao seu. Eu possuo apenas o que Deus me deu.
Se você insiste em classificar meu comportamento diante musical.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Lori Beckel and Etta Satter here having a rich conversation about civil discourse. We'd like to spend just a little bit of time talking about why this is so important now. There are many things happening in our democracy right now. People have concerns about many different things. It is true that active involvement supports democracy. Active involvement has to do with having civil, constructive conversations with people, especially people who are feeling perhaps disenfranchised. The historians tell us that the breakdown of democracy comes as people disengage, people become rageful, they lose faith in each other, in government, in the systems that we rely on, and that leading to oftentimes mass confusion about what in the heck is really going on. And so at this time in our American society, Etta and I just want to make a very strong case for why civil discourse is such an important action item for keeping our democracy alive and well. Etta?
Well, if we look at the trajectory that we're on as a nation, if we don't start listening to one another and healing these conversations and listening, you know, truly to understand where are we headed?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I look at our community here in Idaho Springs or in, you know, Clear Creek County broadly, or in any of our mountain communities and amongst those people that we know and our friends. We want to stay together as a country, and that's not going to happen if we don't, you know, really practice in real life. Take it out of the theoretical
right
here, that we've done a pretty good job, I think. And thank you, Lori, for engaging in this conversation and inviting me. But if we, you know, we really need to practice this, conversation, knowing that we're not going to do it perfectly, but with the goal of healing. Mm-hmm. Our country,
healing our
conversations, or else, you know, where are we headed?
Where are we headed? Yeah. So we thought about a particular conversation that may be on many people's minds right now, and that is related to healthcare in America. I'd like to just, again, you know, one of our points was to work from facts and import a couple of important facts. You've heard these in the news because they are related to the government shutdown right now. And they are related to a lot of people's worry and concern about healthcare in this country. So 2.2 million Americans are set to lose the assistance they rely on to afford health care. And this will happen if there isn't legislation to continuing to support the subsidies for the Affordable Care Act and people who choose their health care on the marketplace. That is the cause, that is the other side of the current stalemate. One third of all Americans are underinsured or not insured at all. 30% of Americans don't have health care. 45% of American adults report struggling to cover medical bills. Almost half Americans. Wow. So very much related to people not having health care. They cannot pay their medical bills mm-hmm. because we all get sick. 7/10 of adults say they've received medical bills they can't afford. Hmm. Medical bankruptcy in this country is higher than anywhere else in the world. Mm-hmm. People lose their homes over needing to seek health care. And those are what Americans are facing. Mm-hmm. All the while, health insurance companies, since the Affordable Care Act, have collectively racked up more than $371 billion, with a B, dollars in profits. Healthcare in our country is a corporation that's making money on the ill health and the inability to afford healthcare by Americans. So at this time in our country, in the fact that our government is shut down over this very issue, Etta and I thought that there may be someone in your life who may be losing their health care, who may be very concerned about being able to continue to pay for it. They may have a pre-existing condition, or someone in their family does. And to be aware that this is a time of great concern about healthcare. So, Etta, I'm wondering your thoughts.
Well, these statistics are just amazing. And it is this country that makes, that has healthcare be a business as opposed to the overall well-being. We're more concerned about, I say we broadly in our approach to healthcare, about making, you know, where's the incentive for health mm-hmm. in healthcare? Mm-hmm. It's I don't think any other country does that. But so let's see here, Lori. We're going to do a little role playing here, I think, and
very
these are
quickly,
not
we are.
Not necessarily the opinions that I might hold, but I'm going to attempt here to do an adversarial approach. You know, just to we're going to try to emulate a conversation on using civil discourse. So
very good.
Well, you know, why should the Congress have another vote on this? I mean, why not just come together and pass the continuing resolution and then have the conversation around healthcare? I mean, why stop the government? Why stop paying people who work in our parks and our, you know, God forbid, our FAA, you know, and the air traffic controllers. I mean, come on. And then let's have a conversation. Why hold it up?
So, Etta, it sounds like you're pretty concerned about the government shutdown and why there is this stalemate. And I don't know what your healthcare situation is. What kind of health care do you have currently for you and your family?
Well, being an elder, and I have the great advantage of Medicare uh-huh. and of having a choice of plans, not traditional, Medicare, but I have an Advantage Care plan. I had to change the plan so I could keep my doctor. But, why should I have to pay for someone's health care when I do everything that I can as an individual to stay healthy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm completely into prevention, and you know, so why should I pay for someone's health care if they want to eat donuts and drink sodas and prepared foods and all the rest of it and use pesticides and not rinse their fruits and vegetables? Why should I pay for that?
Right. Well, it sounds like you've really given this some thought. And, you know, those of us who have Medicare, a government health care system that has been shown that is not a for-profit system, and we need to make sure people understand, unlike private health care, Medicare does not exist to make money. Medicare exists, we've paid into it since we had our first jobs, to cover us when we are 65 with health care. And we can choose then the government run health care, the Part A, which covers hospitalization. And then we can choose from the insurance options to give us additional help. But, you know, we're lucky.
We have
a Medicare program. Others are not so lucky. They do not have Medicare for all. So in this conversation, and sadly, we're not going to be able to have much more of it because we're coming up on the hour, but I would probably say something to Etta like, so we're lucky, Etta, with Medicare, but I'm wondering, do you have children and grandchildren or nieces and nephews who might currently have been able to afford health care? Maybe you even have a grandchild with a chronic illness. Who could become insured under the ACA when it was passed and can afford that health care because of the government subsidies?
Well, you bring up a very good point there, Lori, because if we do not, if Congress does not approve a continuation to help people who have a pre-existing condition, or let's say diabetes, you know, diabetic. And if we take away the price, you know, negotiating for prices on insulin, or I think it was under President Biden that only $35, was it a dose or a month or something?
Yeah, for insulin.
If we cut off all of that, then people's premiums, it's going to be unaffordable. They're not going to be able to, and as it is, I think many families are not able to afford the health care, particularly if they have a pre-existing condition that they had, and it's going to make health care unaffordable.
Yeah.
So that's a good point, Lori. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, and I would just say, so realizing that, Etta, I just want to say, and then sadly we're not going to be able to continue this conversation much further, but, you know, in my role as your partner in this conversation, I would just say, so, Etta, the Democrats are holding out because they are concerned about those 22 million Americans who are set to lose their health care, either through losing their subsidy or by losing Medicaid. So that is why they've drawn a line in the sand at this point in time and are ready to negotiate, but not on the back of Americans losing health care.
And again, I was role-playing.
Right. I know you were. So anyway, I hope, listeners, that little bit of conversation and practice was helpful. And how did that conversation feel to you, Etta?
It felt pretty good. Yeah. And again, there are kernels of truth that we want to hear I think to have a successful negotiation in Congress, I would hope that each side would recognize that reality is when it happens to you, you know, and maybe a congressman might not understand, you know, someone's position if they don't have a family member that has, you know, that has a pre-existing condition or, you know, the cost. I mean, some of the costs of some of these drugs are just phenomenal.
Right.
Or rare diseases or genetic mutations or something that, you know, it puts it a tremendous burden on a family. So I wish that our Congress people could take a page from what we've just talked about and be able to listen to one another as opposed to blaming and accusing.
Exactly. Yeah, it'd be fabulous. So really take a look at what's coming in the mail related to your insurance premiums. Most people's are going up, some significantly. Call your congressman. Call your senator. Talk to your family members who may be in red states who can speak with their senators about the need to continue to provide health care.
In fact, I can give the phone number for the congressional phone line.
Great.
It's area code 202-224-3121, and an operator will come on. You can ask for any congressman or any senator, any state, and if you don't get a staffer that answers the phone, you will get a prompt to leave a message, and it does matter.
It does matter. Let your voices be heard. So as a sort of a final thought about all of this, historians really have suggested that people's lives improving, when people's lives improve, fascism loses its pull. We need to prove that democracy can work again. And that is really the substance of our conversation today. And I just want to thank Etta Satter so much for being the wonderful friend and person she is and sharing her deep belief in civil discourse with us today on this program. Etta, thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Lori. Thanks for inviting me. And again, it's a practice, isn't it?
It is a practice.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Very good. Yeah. Thank you so much all for listening to us today on What's Upstream.
What's coming up? What's going down? What's coming to our town? It's gonna be good.